welcome to Stick to Wrestling. I'm here with John McAdam. John, how you doing?
Sean Goodwin, how are you this week?
I hate doing the intros, man. I just do. I'm just telling you. I just, you know.
Well, you're doing them.
So if that sounded really bad, it was done against my will. That's all I'm saying. So,
everything we do to Sean against his will.
So let's start, because we wanted to get right into this, because we are both adamant not to have a third episode on this. Last week, we started a episode about the Freebirds and the Von Erichs.
Yeah, and we got about 2% into the feud, so we've got like 98% to go today.
But it was the big two. Basically, it was the entire show was pretty much the brief lead-up to the Christmas Day show on 1982. And that was the entire show, basically, was talking about that match. And to be honest with you, you could have talked about it for another 7 hours.
I mean, it was such a big deal.
It was a big deal. It was so well done. I mean, everybody performed well in that for the most part. I mean, you didn't have that Gene Knitsky moment in Starrcade, you know, where everything's going great and one guy has the foobar in the middle of it. So, I mean, it really was a well done angle, and it really kind of was the fuel that set up a pretty long feud.
It created a territory.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was no one, as Michael Hayes will happily wax poetic about it for a long time, there was nothing before they got there. I mean, you had some business, but it's nothing compared to what it was.
No, it totally changed the promotion's fortunes. I mean, by the middle of 83, World Class Championship Wrestling was on the cover of wrestling magazines, which I don't think you ever saw before.
No. So let me go through a brief kind of look at the timeline here to make sure we're on the same page. Because to be honest with you, in 84, I was more of a WWF guy. 85, I sold into JCP. So I was in and out at this point. So you'll have to help me out with that.
I can try.
So started on Christmas Day, 82. And the first run went till September 3rd, 1984.
Right, and by that point, the Freebirds had already made their WWF debut. One thing I wanted to talk about, you had mentioned the last time we talked that Michael Hayes' reaction when David Von Erich volunteered to give up the title. And you were like, no, Michael was kind of upset. He thought he was going to get David Von Erich an upgrade from Buddy Roberts. And I was like, no, man, he seems jubilant. I went back and watched it, and he kind of seemed to go back and forth. You have a point there. He seemed very happy and a little bit mind-blown, but it was almost like at one point he was shaking his head no. So I saw something I never saw before.
To be specific, if you didn't have heard, I had a chance to hear that part of the show from last week, was we were discussing the moment right after the Freebirds had won the six-man. Buddy wasn't there for whatever reason, and David filled in. And then when they won, David voluntarily gave the belt to Buddy, saying that you guys would do the same thing for us. And they were friends, really close friends at this point. Yep. And the discussion we had was the look on Michael's face when David did it. John had said that it looked more like he was very appreciative of what they were doing, of what he was doing. And I was more along the lines of, this was the precursor to what was coming, because there was a look of disappointment, like, we thought you were one of us.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a rejection, it felt like to me. So, I mean, that was the moment we were talking about, just had to clarify. I thought it was a critical moment. It just kind of, especially looking back on it.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, they put the whole thing together well. Now, I think the last thing we talked about was the Bill Mercer visiting the Freebirds' house when they were playing pool. And I saw this like 35 years ago, and back then it cracked me up that there's a Freebird mansion somewhere in Dallas where all three of them live. And for the first time, so when we started doing this particular show, I kind of thought of this. I'm like, wait a minute, doesn't that make sense? Instead of the three of them getting three separate apartments, they just rent a nice house in Dallas, and it's the Freebirds' house. That finally dawned on me. I don't know.
Of course it does. They did everything together. They always said that. Wherever they went, they would do everything together, except for that weird thing in Georgia where they split them up. But they did everything together, so it made perfect sense. And that, by the way, if memory serves, that basement was designed like every basement that was ever designed in that era, with that kind of paneled wood. I'm just sitting there. I saw that, and I'm looking around my basement. I was like, exact same thing, except for the Confederate flag. So that was that interview would have been right afterwards. So say like January or something.
Yeah, right afterwards was the first interview the Freebirds did since the cage match.
Right. Now, how did the feud progress from here?
Well, they came out. Let me think. First, they did some strange booking. I thought they had Michael Hayes like wrestle on TV against Jose Lothario, and that match went to a 10-minute draw, which really surprised me at the time because, I mean, nothing against Lothario. He was a big deal in Dallas, you know, I mean, as early as 5 or 6 years ago. But at this point, he's older, he's not getting pushed, and Michael Hayes can't put him away. So I think early on, the Freebirds should have been booked stronger. But if I recall correctly, the next thing they did was they had a non-title six-man tag team match that they put right on television, which at the time blew my mind because the WWF would never run a match like that on their TV. I can't think of really any promotion that would.
Here's the thing that amazed me about this kind of era. It was a great feud just because they just had that great chemistry together in the ring. But outside of the original cage match, which is why I'm telling you, you said it's 2%. I'll say it's about 40% because they propelled off that angle for so long. There was no adjustment to anything. You know, you just put the six of them in the match with, one of their favorites was when they all came, you know, the bunkhouse, whatever they called it. But Dusty's bunkhouse match where everyone came in with the boots. And why did everyone have to dress like a cowboy in that match?
That's a good point. I mean, I guess if you get cowboy boots, you can take them off and clonk people in the head.
Hey, you do that with construction boots, too. Come like, you know, it could be like something from the, you know, YMCA Village People or something like that. this is part of the reason why it's difficult because, you know, that's what it was the same feud, really. There was really no adjustment to it through the first segment.
I don't know about that. Because one of the great things about the feud, I thought, if my math is correct, you have 9 different possibilities for singles matches, 6 different possibilities with just the Freebirds and Von Erichs for our traditional 4-man tag team matches, and then they would throw in like Iceman Parsons, Chris Adams, Jimmy Garvin into the mix. So I think that's one reason they could keep the feud going as long as they did, and we'll get more into that later.
Yeah, but true, and I don't think they used that enough to their advantage because I don't think they shot off additional feuds. Kevin versus Gordy, or you know, it would always come back to the hole. They wouldn't like spring those guys off, which I thought would have been fantastic for them. You know, then you go from having you know one big main event to 3.
Yeah,
and I don't think they did that enough.
I think they did a really good job with it. They kept a lot of different guys in the mix, and the feud was so, you know, organic where you could get different matches just out of the two factions. I thought they did a tremendous job with it.
Okay, name me 3 major singles feuds that came out of that. That you, like, remember stuff about.
There wasn't really a thing. I mean, maybe Ice.
That's
versus
my point.
Right, but you didn't need one. Like you had the
at some point you had
Von Erichs.
Yeah, first of all, the fact that you didn't need one tells you the greatness of that angle. Okay, because the angle was so great it propelled them for 2 years, and they could have gone on farther. You know, they left. You could have carried that on for probably another year. That's how great that angle was. But I'm just saying, usually at some point in the middle, you would have to make some kind of an adjustment. You know, like they did with the Briscoes and the Funks. You had like a million different versions of that going on all over the place. There was never really an adjustment. It was just that we got stuck this first time 2 years ago, and we're still fighting over this. We couldn't decide it. And they made that last for 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, well, like I said, we'll get more into that because it's interesting you and I have different perspectives because, you know, we got World Class Wrestling on Channel 25 mm-hmm. in Boston and,
yep.
you know, I would watch it and I think you were too young, which goes to show how freaking old I am. But is that true? You weren't watching?
I would have been 1982. I would have been 7.
Okay.
So
I was a senior in high school, so
I remember, I could tell you, my thing is, I could tell you that Christmas Day match if I'd never seen it since. And I still could, like, retell every moment of that. That's how powerful that match was.
But did you watch it when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
wow,
they put it on the TV
right.
and everything. Yeah, I definitely remember. Right. It's one of those things I remember. I remember that. I, for some reason, have this weird memory of the Arn-Manny Fernandez feud. I don't know why I'm remembering that, but I have clear memories of that. And that was just one of those things that stuck with me. And a lot of the stuff I saw didn't stick with me, but that did. Because it just jumped out at you like, wow, that was – wow. I mean, the crowd, it was perfect. It was the perfect angle.
It really was. And it was – not only was it the perfect – well, I mean, it was the perfect angle because it spawned a great feud. It spawned a great promotion.
And at that point, they just kind of glided – I mean, as far as storytelling goes, as far as booking goes, kind of glided on it. But they glided off the charisma of the six together.
Yeah. And the fact that it was such a natural rivalry, which we touched upon the last show, it was the most obvious three-on-three out there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and looking back on it, you knew they had to flip them. I mean, you knew it was coming. I wouldn't have at all. But I'm saying, looking back on it, that you have all those guys on the same side. They're not flipping the Von Erichs.
Yeah. You know, another thing that kept the feud going is, I mean, they did stuff I had never seen a promotion do before. They had crazy matches right on TV where you'd have, you know, either singles, traditional four-man tags, and six-mans. Like, they had this crazy country whipping match where they just gave all the guys belts. They had a penalty box match. They had a captain's match. They had a tornado match, which I had never seen on TV before. Brass knuckles matches. The work. And, of course, I don't think they were calling it a Bad Street match in 83, but it was, the Bad Street matches from July 4th.
And the Bad Street matches were?
Basically a bunkhouse match.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of their matches seem to be that, because I have a recollection of a lot of those, where they're all sitting there in their jeans and their cowboy boots whipping the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a lot of that. How many of the guys from that era do you know?
What do you mean? Personally?
Personally. That you know.
Oh, God. I from World Class?
Yeah.
I don't know, probably that I have known at some point, probably four or five.
Yeah, that you've had full conversations with and stuff like that you would know.
Yeah.
Okay. If you could run through the first era of the feud, that first part until they left the WWF in, again, it was September 84. What were some of the highlights in that era? For that first segment? Because it broke into like three segments, right?
Which broke into three segments?
Well, the whole feud as a whole. You had the first segment in 84. Then they came back again soon after that. They had another one, and then they had the third one. They had another one like in 88.
Yeah, they had the 83-84 feud. Then the Freebirds came back. It was either the very end of 85 or the very beginning of 86. And then they did something else in 88. But I do want to talk about like the 83-84 feud a little bit.
Oh, absolutely,
more.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Right. I'm just putting it together that there were three portions of the feud.
Yeah,
so
no, that
this
is correct.
This is the first. This is 83 up until September 1984. What were some of the highlights?
One of the highlights for me, and I'm going to ask you for one too, they had a June Star Wars event, and it was going to be – the main event was Kevin Von Erich against Harley Race, who had just won the NWA title. I think it was June 17th, so he must have won it like just 6 days ago. So they couldn't have got that on TV. Then they had David Von Erich against Jimmy Garvin for the Texas title, and Kerry Von Erich against Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy. But wait, Kerry Von Erich had a surprise tag team partner coming in. So and Hayes did this interview twice. He's out there. He's like, okay, I look into things. You know I look into things, Mercer, and I know who it's not going to be. He's like, it's not going to be Fritz Von Erich. No, Kerry, your dad's not coming, even going to come out of retirement for you. It's not going to be Andre the Giant, because I know Andre the Giant is going to be in Puerto Rico. It's not going to be your European flunky Lance Von Erich, because he's in Europe. And I'm like, who the hell is Lance Von Erich? And 2 years later, he shows up. But I'm dying to know where that came from.
Huh.
And then Hayes goes, and I know it's not going to be Dusty Rhodes because he's too fat. And he said it in such a nasty way. I have no idea what Hayes did to what Dusty did to piss Hayes off so much. But he got that line off twice. And, of course, it wound up being Bruiser Brody.
Yeah, because it's the one place in the entire world where Bruiser's a babyface.
Yeah, that's actually true. The more I think about it, he was, I think he was still a babyface in Southwest, but then again, he hadn't been there in a while. So yeah. And then in the middle of the match, and I hadn't seen a Bruiser Brody match, I don't think, since he was in Georgia, maybe 2 years earlier, and he was a heel there. And in the middle of the match, well, actually towards the end of the match, I mean, he was such a nut. He picks up Kerry Von Erich. I'm like, okay, here we go. Here's the turn. And he just, like, throws him into Michael Hayes. I think it was Hayes. And just put, and that's how they got the pinfall and won the titles. It was a really good match, and it was a good show.
Okay, so mine. I think something that really hurt this feud was was when David died.
Yeah.
Now, you can say, you have people who would say he's overrated. It's one of those things where he just was so crazy overrated at the beginning that eventually he ends up becoming underrated. I mean, the guy wasn't a stiff. I mean, he wasn't the greatest guy ever. Compared to the rest of them, he was. He was the most polished. He was the, you know, he's the most polished product out of the brothers, I thought.
Yeah, and you got to remember, too, David... I hope I didn't mention this on the last show. David was right around the same age as a lot of guys who were huge stars, wait for it, during the Monday Night Wars. He was basically the same age as Scott Hall, Bret Hart, Kevin Nash. I think he would have had one hell of a career. He was only 24 when he died, and he was already a veteran. He was going to get nothing but better. And I was recently watching some of the feud, and we were talking about – I was recently watching where Hayes, we were just talking about where David gave the belt back. David was way taller than Terry Gordy, who was considered a huge guy in a super heavyweight. David had 3 inches on Gordy.
Yeah, David had basketball player height.
Yeah. And, you know, he had the athleticism to play hoops at North Texas State. So I think David, you know, he was good already, and I think he was going to get nothing but better.
And he was by far the best promo of the bunch.
Well, that's not saying much. But
That's not saying much. It's part of the reason why people like David was because, to be honest with you, in comparison, he was really good.
Yeah.
So I would say... Okay, Kerry finally wins the belt over Rick in the memorial. You know, one of them had to get the belt at some point. They've been running this angle where they're trying to get the NWA champion, and they're going to retire and all this other stuff. At some point, they had to get the belt.
Yeah, this has been a hotly debated thing over the internet, you know, since the IWC became a thing, you know, 20 plus years ago. Was David actually promised the NWA title? I think he was, because I was watching a bunch of this stuff like maybe 15 years ago, and they had clearly booked themselves into a corner.
Oh, yeah.
Where if David didn't win that belt, he was going to lose all face, especially after Kerry didn't win the belt. I believe he was getting the title.
Who could make him that promise?
I'm going to go with the word agreement over promise, but if Fritz Von Erich clearly wanted it, and Fritz had a lot of pull in the NWA.
Fritz had wanted it for years.
What's that?
Fritz had wanted it for years.
Yeah.
He still hadn't been able to do it yet, so.
I think he was going to do it. I think David was going to get what Kerry got, which was a 3-week run with the belt. So you could say he was a former NWA champion. And by this point, they were doing that so much, which I'm against, by the way. But, you know, if you're Fritz Von Erich, you're saying, look, if you can do this for Tommy Rich, you can certainly do it for one of my kids.
Yeah, that's going to be the argument. And basically he did. I mean, you had to do something because you were going to basically and start killing your territory because they run that angle for so long. Memphis did it. I don't know how they did it with Lawler and Bachwinkle.
Lawler.
I mean, yeah, that went forever.
Yeah, and Waller at the beginning of 85, and here we are getting off track again, but I'll go right back in.
Right.
You know, he said, if I don't win the title this year, I am going to retire. And I think Waller was kind of promised the belt, and, you know, well, obviously he didn't retire.
Well, actually, we're not getting off track because it was all kind of important, because it was important to really kind of place David in context.
Yeah.
And they never replaced him.
You know, yeah, no, they didn't. I mean, in a weird way, and this is going to sound like just an awful thing to say, I'm not sure how they were going to manage a four-man Von Erich team against a three-man Freebird team unless they were planning on, you know, bringing in someone else, Jimmy Garvin or maybe Austin Idol. I have no idea, but to me that would have looked very convoluted.
You still think they're going to run Mike out there if David lives?
Yeah, I mean, oh, definitely. They, I mean, going over the feud, Mike was right in the middle of all this before.
I know, but so was David Flair. I mean, eventually became a wrestler and everything. But I mean, you seriously, they were looking at Mike as possibly. I just thought he was thrown in there as an emergency.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact.
Oh.
No, they threw him right in the middle of it. They did a thing, and it was so funny. It was in Fort Worth. It was, I want to say, October of 83. Kerry and Mike are in the ring. They, you know, welcome Mike Von Erich, the newest wrestling Von Erich. And Kerry gives him a jacket, and Kerry's like, you know, my mom made this jacket for me. And I've never lost a match where I've worn this jacket to the ring. And I'm giving it to Mike. Let me tell you, I wouldn't have given that jacket to my little brother if I had never lost a match where I'd worn it to the ring. But I'm not the great guy that Kerry is. And of course, Kerry leaves, and Mike's sitting there doing an interview, or at least Mike's trying to do an interview. And of course, Michael Hayes comes out and he rips up the jacket. And then Mike Von Erich, Hayes goes to leave, and Mike Von Erich jumps on his back like a girl in a bar fight. It was too funny. And I'm just like, oh, my God, this guy is clearly not ready, but it doesn't matter. They're pushing him anyway.
Oh, no, just anyway. So that brings back to my favorite moment, which is going to be kind of an odd one because in retrospect, he had to be there. It was one of those things. It was, I'll try to explain it. It was when Kerry won the belt.
Huh?
But it wasn't that match. It was an earlier match with, it was Mike, the old man, and Kevin against the Freebirds.
Yep.
And it was the first one of these matches we were talking about, the Bunkhouse match. That was a particularly crazy match. And that was the hottest I have ever heard a crowd in my life.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Crowd was nuts for that match.
They set it up perfectly. They had, you know, Fritz had pretty much been off TV until right before the November cage match. And basically, you know, Hayes does his whole mystery partner thing. I think he got to call Dusty Fat one more time. And he's like, I want to know who Kevin and Mike's partner is. And Fritz, of course, says the partner is going to be the next person who punches you right in the nose. And of course, Hayes is like, what? What are you talking about? Bam.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that. Fritz's last great moment.
Yeah, actually, it really was. But here's the thing. My take on it was, now, as someone like you, I was watching the feud live. Week by week on Channel 25 in Boston, and by the fall, I felt like that feud was getting very old and very stale. And I could be, you know, that could just be me being wrong about something. But
nope.
Wrestling, the feuds I was used to, I mean, Backlund's feuds did not go any more than 3 months, ever. Well, the Patterson feud went 4 months. That was the one exception. When I saw feuds from other territories, they did not go 9 or 10 months. And when they finally did the Kerry Von Erich, Michael Hayes cage match on Thanksgiving night, like I said, the feud was getting a little bit stale already. And I've told this story on the 605 before, but I was at the Boston Garden. It was Columbus Day weekend, 1983, and as usual, before the last match, they announced what the next month's show was going to be, and they announced the card. It was Bob Backlund against Masked Superstar in a Texas Death Match, And then they said, and also we have a special bonus match. SD Special Delivery Jones against Fabulous Freebird Michael Hayes. The Boston Garden came unglued. The place went bananas. And I think they never said anything about it ever again. And I think they were just throwing a trial balloon out there. Like, okay, how many people really know about this show? Well, pretty much everyone in the Boston Garden did. And so we go home and we're like, okay, the Freebirds and Von Erichs feud is reaching its natural conclusion. And the Freebirds are coming to the WWF. And this is going to be awesome. You know, you can have Terry Gordy and Michael Hayes in singles matches against Backlund, and then you can put the tag team titles on them. They're going to be here for a long time. We like the Freebirds. This is good. And like I said, nothing came out of it. It was never mentioned again.
And to clarify the 3 months, it was basically that was the WWF rule forever, where you have the three guard matches.
Mm-hmm.
A fourth if everything was going real well, but it was usually always three. So, and they booked the entire program around that 3 week, 3 week, 3 week. So it's amazing how they end up tightening, you know, they got all that anger out of their system quickly. But with this, yeah, it was definitely running out of steam, because usually if you're going to have a feud that long, even with the old, the feud in Japan, the Choshu's Army, you had kind of like little tweaks to it here and there, little different annoyances that would happen. They were just propelling themselves off the charisma of the six and the chemistry of the six and that one incident. That's what I was saying earlier. That's why it started getting stale.
I think it started getting stale for me personally, because it wasn't what I was used to. I was used to having a feud reach its natural conclusion, you know, within a certain time frame. And, you know, we're like 9 or 10 months into it. And I'm like, okay, I'm even though I liked it, and in retrospect, I enjoy it. At the time, as you know, someone who watched it on TV, I'm like, man, I'm ready for the Von Erichs to do something else and for the Freebirds to go somewhere else. So I thought that was coming to, again, its natural conclusion. They are having a cage match on Thanksgiving night, and it's going to be a loser-leave-town match between Kerry Von Erich and Michael Hayes. And I'm like, all right, you know, this is going to be it. Part of me thought, because 1983 was the year of the babyface comes back under a mask after getting screwed out of in a loser leave town match. You had Dusty in Florida as the Midnight Rider, JYD as the Stagger Lee, and you had Charlie Brown, Jimmy Valiant in Mid-Atlantic. So part of me thought that they were bringing this to Texas, that Kerry was going to get screwed and he was going to come back under a mask. But I was like, nah, I think that Michael Hayes and the Freebirds are leaving. And it was a really good match, and it had the perfect finish. Buddy tried to interfere, and he tried to climb the cage, and he wound up getting crotched on the top rope. Then Gordy tried to get in the cage. Gordy was in the cage, and Fritz Von Erich slammed the door against his head. Perfect revenge. And Kerry won the match, and Hayes is gone.
I recall that Buddy Roberts spot quite often. That seemed to be one of his go-tos.
saved for the big moments.
Yeah. So they go to New York.
That's and, what I'm thinking.
Yep,
not
I
yet,
believe
though.
Not yet. So
not yet. They're,
what did they do after?
Afterwards, so I'm thinking, and by this point, the feud's over. And to me, it's almost like when you think a movie's over. It's like you kind of, you know, and the movie keeps going. It's got like another 20, 30 minutes. You've already kind of mentally checked out of it.
Yeah, so the climax came too early, right.
Right. So now they're doing Christmas night, and it's going to be Terry Gordy and Buddy Roberts against Kevin Von Erich and Mike Von Erich. And so this is Mike already, you know, definitely getting the main event push right away. And the stipulations were that if Kevin lost, if either Kevin or Mike lost, that Kevin would have to leave Texas. Not Mike, because he had to stay in Texas and train. If the Freebirds lost, if the Freebirds won, Kevin would have to leave and Michael Hayes would get to come back. But if whichever Freebird got pinned, if they lost, they would have to leave Texas for a year. They also did a really good job with this. I sure brought this up earlier. when they were building up for the Kerry Von Erich versus Michael Hayes cage match, they emphasized that if Kerry lost, he couldn't wrestle in Texas for a year, but he could live in Texas. That's where he lives, and, you know, he doesn't have to leave the state. I thought
nice touch.
What's that?
Nice touch.
Very nice touch. It made it seem very authentic. And
they looked like they were covering for themselves in case you lost.
Right, and then they would do the mask angle. But that made total sense. I'm glad that, you know, that was an excellent idea, and they did it for this match too.
Yeah.
Well, Terry Gordy takes the fall in this match. And now we've got Gordy and Hayes both banned from wrestling in Texas for a year. And my friends and I are all kind of wondering, okay, well, what happens next in World Class? Who's coming in? And they started pushing like the Super Destroyers and just some pretty weak acts. The Jimmy Garvin push continued. And at this point, we're starting to miss the Freebirds a little bit, or at least we want someone to come in. We don't want this to be, you know, pre-Christmas 1982 World Class all over again. And they did an angle where they come on TV, and it's been announced that the Von Erichs were defending the six-man tag team titles, world six-man tag team titles, in Atlanta, Georgia, where the Claw Hold is banned, and the Freebirds won it back in Atlanta. And even as a kid, I'm like, that is freaking ridiculous. I know World Class doesn't promote in Atlanta, and I would think that the average fan in Texas would know that too.
Oh, either they're going, why didn't we get the match?
Well, they have to defend the world six-man titles all over the world, and the Freebirds are banned from Texas.
That's true. Okay.
Right. So now we've got a little bit of a problem. The world six-man tag team champions can't wrestle in Texas.
Yeah.
So the Von Erichs come on TV, and they challenge the Freebirds to one more match. In Dallas, we're going to lift the stipulation for one match. And if the Von Erichs win, they win the six-man titles, and the Freebirds cannot wrestle for them again for a year anywhere in the world. But if the Von Erichs lose, the Freebirds not only retain their titles, but they get to come back to Georgia. And once again, I want to say this is February 84, and I'm like, all right, man, this has got to be it. They've got to have this match, have the Von Erichs win, and move on to something else. We're on 15 months of this, right?
Yeah.
So they have the match. It was going to be Kerry, Kevin, and David against the Freebirds. Well, before the match, the Freebirds attacked Kevin in the dressing room, bloodied him up. Kevin's all glassy-eyed and concussed. He cannot wrestle. Mike takes his place. They have a really good match. This was like a four-and-a-half star match. And, you know, we'll talk about Mike a little bit later. But really good match. Everyone's, you know, Mike's doing what he can do. Okay, Mike can do a headlock. Great. You know, well, let's not ask him to do more than he can actually do. The match is going on. The Von Erichs are doing well. And Kevin, in an absolute rage, comes to the match doing the Spirit of 76 thing with his head bandaged up, runs in, attacks the Freebirds. He's so livid, he's pushing his own brothers aside. And oh no, the Von Erichs are disqualified. The Freebirds retain the titles, and they can wrestle in Texas again. At this point, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Come on, how about you do a job? My God.
Oh, no, no.
Now, weren't the Freebirds faces at some point in this run?
They sort of kind of were, but not.
Because I know they were, because this led to my favorite match of the, probably outside of the cage match, and also the second match that is seared in my memory from seeing it live.
Okay, what's that?
That would be Gordy and Khan.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's give a little background on that.
Yeah.
They have the Bad Street match at Texas Stadium, and the Von Erichs win, obviously. But wait, someone attacks Kevin Von Erich after the match, and it's Killer Khan, who we've never seen before.
Really? That was his first time in Texas?
As far as I, unless he had been there in the 70s or something, which I don't think he had been. Yeah, this was his first, that was his debut. And I remember Mark Lawrence, you know, saying, "Oh, there's this giant Oriental attacking Kevin Von Erich." And I'm like, "Wow, that's Killer Khan, man." So they have Killer Khan as sort of a part of the Freebird gang now. He's Terry Gordy's friend from Japan who taught him the Oriental Spike. But wait, Skandor Akbar then turns around and has Killer Khan turn on the Freebirds.
And this and after some, you know, this finally leads to what I think is the absolute gold standard of Texas death matches. This should be the standard by which all of them are held to. It was on TV. It was probably the it may have been the most violent match I've ever seen on TV.
It
Certainly up until that
for this
time.
era, it was off the charts.
Oh, even without, I mean, it was a slow, sick brawl. There was no. It was just. It looked like they were killing each other, and Kerry was the referee. I remember that, and for some reason, Kerry decided to do with the jeans and the, you know, the Fabio look for the
Yeah,
match.
the referee's not wearing a shirt for this match. Okay, Kerry.
I mean,
He's
you
not
probably want
wearing
to
his
wear a
gray
hazmat.
corduroys.
Yeah, you probably want to wear a hazmat for this match. But the rules of the match were basically Texas Death. It was old school Texas Death. Pinfall, and then there was a 30-second rest period, and then a 10-count after that. Guy who can't make it. They just beat the crap out of each other for 30 minutes or whatever it was. And you're like, you completely bought that the next guy who was going to go down was not going to possibly get up again.
Yeah. And now, do you remember if Khan bled for this match, or was it all Gordy?
Gordy bled so much for this match. I think Khan did too, but it's easy to forget because Gordy just had like four gushers going at the same time.
I mean,
I
put
mean,
it
he
this
was a
way.
bloody mess.
Kerry was covered in blood, and he was the referee.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I said he needed a hazmat suit
Yeah.
for this match. I mean, this was a sick, bloody brawl. Now, this is not something I like to watch all the time, but it completely worked in this context. These two hated each other. It was like the old thing with, you know, Magnum and Tully. What was the angle? Who cares? They hated each other,
Yeah.
and it came across. They had great chemistry. Did they ever wrestle in Japan? Because Khan was huge in Japan at this point. This was right at the height of Choshu's army right now. So he was making money hand over fist over there. Had they wrestled over there?
Not that I know of.
Because, I mean, they just had great chemistry. But Khan, I've never seen Khan have chemistry with anybody then like that. I mean,
No,
he
Khan's a
made a
little
bit
bit
with Andre.
underrated.
And if you haven't been there with the right guy, he's good. And he was great with Gordy. So basically, yeah, there was no headlocks, there was no hip tosses, there was no. They basically just sat in the middle of the ring and beat the crap out of each other, and it made perfect sense.
Yeah, it
The thing
did.
was.
And by this point, the Freebirds had gone to the WWF, left the WWF, and come back to World Class and started feuding with Akbar's guys. So now, once again, we've got. And they, I don't know if they were really baby faces when that match started. I think they were kind of tweeners feuding with Akbar's guys. But
Yeah,
that
the
match
friend of my
ended.
friend kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But at the
Yeah.
end of the match, Kerry Gor excuse me, Kerry Von Erich extended his hand to Terry Gordy, and Gordy initially turned it down, and then, you know, Kerry's like, fine, he leaves the ring. Then Gordy challenges him to come back to the ring, and just as they're about to start exchanging punches, Terry Gordy sticks out his hand. Kerry shakes it, and what a moment. The Freebirds and Von Erichs have made peace.
Yep. And okay, so again, that match. I could have told you that match from heart, and I hadn't seen it for, oh, I don't even know how long. It would have been 20 some odd years until I saw it again. It would have been some YouTube thing. But it had been years since I had seen this match. And I knew it, I remembered it was exactly like I remembered it. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was something I had never seen anything like that on television before. Nothing. I don't even know what second place would have been in November 84 when that match aired.
No, I'm trying to think of something maybe like in Memphis, maybe like, you know, one of those matches. But I mean, this thing was crazy.
Sorry, Walter Patterson, but that was on cable.
Yeah, that was HBO, so that doesn't really count. But oh, it was. I was sitting there. I was 9 years old when I saw that the first time. I wasn't even nine. I was eight. I was about to be nine in a couple months, and that was. I was like, I can't believe I'm watching this right now. Am I supposed to be watching this?
I've got one. Tully Blanchard absolutely butchered Eric Embry on Southwest TV. I want to say August or September 1983. And,
yeah.
Okay, that one was a contender, and yeah, Southwest got in trouble with USA Network for airing that on a Sunday morning. But anyway,
yeah, that is true. But that didn't make sense as much as this did. This is just that just made sense. What else do you remember from that second part of the feud?
Let me think. I mean, just, you know, like I said, the beginning of 84. It almost seemed like, you know, it was getting too monotonous. I watch it now, and I enjoy it greatly. Also, one thing that I thought was kind of symbolic, we mentioned that, you know, Killer Khan made his debut at Texas Stadium, and it felt like, for real, the Von Erichs versus Freebirds was over after that, after the six-man match at Texas Stadium with Fritz. And I remember my friends and I just laughing over Fritz Von Erich, who was an old man by that point, you know, and he's throwing these punches, and Terry Gordy and Michael Hayes are just going into orbit selling them. And we all thought that was a tad ridiculous at the time. But but you have to remember, so Von Erichs versus Freebirds kind of ends at the Texas Stadium show. I think it was May 6, 1984. And on that show, Gino Hernandez debuts, just does an interview, shows up in a suit before Jimmy Garvin and Chris Adams, and challenges whoever has the American belt. It was Jim Garvin. He's like, whoever comes out with the American belt, I want the next match. So it was very symbolic. Freebirds versus Von Erichs is over. Gino versus the Von Erichs is about to start.
Would the Texas Stadium crowd have known Gino?
Oh, yeah. I would think most of them would. When was the last time Gino was in Dallas? 80 or 81, I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so he was in Dallas. Okay, so he did have a run in Dallas first. I wasn't sure if that was his first time.
Oh, no. Gino had a huge run in Dallas in the 70s.
Okay.
He was the heartthrob babyface before he turned on his mentor, Jose Lothario. I want to say this was late 78, early 79.
How old would he have been?
What's that?
How old would he have been?
Like 21, I want to say 22. He got a really early start. Well, let me think. When he passed in 86, he was 29. So if we just do the math, he was 20. Oh my God, he was 20.
He had a big run in Detroit too.
Yes, he did. Yeah, also had a big run in Portland.
Right around the same era, so
yeah, I know he was the lead heel in 79 and 80, and I'm not sure when he left. I think he was in Southwest by like the beginning of 81.
So they would reform the new version of the Dynamic Duo with Chris Adams, with Adams and Gino Hernandez.
Yeah,
Original being the better one, which is Gino and Tully, because Tully and Chris is nowhere near as good as Tully ever was, as good as Tully was.
He was in a certain way. I thought Chris Adams had more of a main event aura than Tully did. I think Tully, you know, Tully was great. He was a fantastic interview, awesome worker, great heel, but he lacked in size. And I don't know if I would have taken Tully Blanchard seriously against a big guy like Kerry Von Erich. I'm not sure. Maybe I would have.
Maybe not Kerry, but Kevin was a little smaller.
Kevin was a big guy. I mean, he wasn't as big as Kerry.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when Gino beat Kerry, I was like, oh, what is this? But, you know, I mean, Kerry was a former NWA champion, and Gino's a guy who, you know, was kind of kicking around before he got back to world class.
I always see the argument about Tully, but I'll be honest, he was so good I forgot about it. He was just one of those guys. I just forgot the size altogether. He was just that good. I mean, I never remember Chris being that big.
Adams was big enough. And it worked because you had the background of Chris Adams. You know, he had been in world class for almost 2 years. He was introduced as Kevin Von Erich's pen pal from England. I'm like, okay, what could be less cool than having a male pen pal from across the pond? But anyway, Chris got over it. You know, he was ran around with the Von Erichs. He was beside them. And when they did the turn, that was another moment where the air just came out of the sportatorium.
Another, there was some overlap between the Dynamic Duo and the Freebirds. Didn't they have, some kind of 12-man match?
Okay. This was Texas Stadium. So now the Freebirds have gone on an odd path at this point. They bombed out of the WWF. They were back in world class. They were wrestling some dates for the – I think they were already wrestling some dates for the AWA at this point. They had shown up at Mid-Atlantic and famously got run off by Wahoo McDaniel and Harley Race in a dressing room. You know, they were kind of – I have heard – that they were kind of trying to be like an Andre the Giant type attraction where they don't have one home base. They kind of show up for the big shows everywhere, which kind of didn't really happen. But so they're baby faces at this point, and they have the Texas Stadium show in 1985. And the sixth man was, and again, you know, to the astonishment of everyone, the Freebirds and the Von Erichs are teaming in a 12-man match against, let me see, it was Gino Hernandez, Chris Adams, One Man Gang, Rip Oliver, Steve Williams, and come on, Johnny, one more.
Come on.
Thank you, Kamal. You saved me. And at the end of the match, the Freebirds and the Von Erichs had some kind of a disagreement where the Freebirds walked out on them. And, you know, obviously this is these guys, you know, they were talking about it on TV. It was never meant to be that the Freebirds and the Von Erichs would ever get along. I remember Mark Lorenz saying that.
Now, just to look at the second phase overall, did you feel the same vibe? I mean, obviously you can't possibly have the same vibe as the first 2 years because that was just insane. But how much of a drop-off did you think there was when they came back? To me, it just seemed like they never really got their footing back again.
No, and you know what? Phase one ended at that Texas Stadium match where, you know, okay, they're not baby faces anymore. Then the Freebirds disappeared from world class for a while. And when I say for a while, I'm going to say like 6-7 months. They were in the AWA. I know they had made a couple of Japan tours. They did
a few with the Road Warriors, right?
They did. They had the. They had the match at Comiskey Park, and then they did the angle where they cost the Road Warriors the tag team titles against Jimmy Garvin and was it Steve Regal? Yeah, it was.
Yep, Mr. Electricity.
Yeah, just the guy who should be replacing the Road Warriors, Steve Regal.
Yeah.
And he was actually pretty good, but, you know, he had his limitations, let's be honest. And so the Freebirds are gone for 6-7 months. And the Von Erichs, now this is, like I said, very end of 85. I mean, it aired right around Christmas time here. The Von Erichs were having a match in Fort Worth. And all of a sudden, all three Freebirds show up and destroy Kerry, Kevin, and Mike Von Erich. And as I remember, as I was watching it, I'm going, oh my God, I'm still sick of this feud from the years before, and they're starting it again. That was my reaction.
Well, that's how they should have done it when they came back the first time.
Yeah.
Just coming to blow doors.
Yeah, I mean, the Freebirds had only been gone, like I said, for maybe half a year. And to steal one from Jim Cornette, how can I miss you if you won't go away? and it was way, way too early to bring the Freebirds back. I understand where the appeal is, but I mean, I personally was tired of it, and to this day, not even just, you know, emotionally, but analytically, I'm looking at that saying, all right, it is way too soon to bring the Freebirds back. And it didn't, and you're right, it never really got its footing anywhere near the way it did the first time.
Before we go on, a quick point of clarification. The Steve Regal we were talking about is not the British guy.
Were there three Steve Regals in like 10 years in wrestling?
Maybe. I know the British guy, and I know Mr. Electricity, who could not have been less like anybody named Mr. Electricity. It was almost like, okay, how do we give him charisma? Let's call him Mr. Electricity. Hopefully, everyone just buy on, and we'll just go on from there. The name completely did not fit. So, but yeah, it was some blonde guy with a mustache.
Yeah. Yeah, the junior heavyweight guy.
Yeah, exactly. So I just want to make sure, in case the William Regal fans get upset about our besmirching their great champion, you know, we were talking about another guy. If they have a problem, I don't know what to tell you.
All right.
So they bring them back again. Well, first of all, when they brought him back the second time, you're right, they did bring him back early. Was there a reason why that? I mean, was their business dropping off that badly?
I mean, well, they had finished off the Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez feud versus the Von Erichs. First, they had the Cotton Bowl match where Gino and Chris got their heads shaved. World Class is a funny promotion. It has the exact date when it got good and the exact date where it fell off. It got good Christmas night, 1982, and it fell off whatever day it was, October 1985, at the Cotton Bowl when Adams and Hernandez got their heads shaved. Now, of course, it's World Class. They got to keep the feud going too long. They do the thing where Gino and Chris are wearing masks, and now we want to get the mask removed so we can see what they look like bald, even though it's
worst masks ever.
Yeah. So they do the thing on, it was Christmas night. They had a cage match, the Von Erichs against Adams and Hernandez. The Von Erichs beat them. They take their masks. By this point, Adams and Hernandez pretty much have full heads of hair anyway. And they did an angle where Gino and Chris kind of split up that night. So at this point, Rick Rude is the top heel in World Class. And I'm not saying this to get anyone angry. Rude did not get over. And I believe one big reason he did not get over was Percy Pringle. I thought Rude would have been better off on his own. I thought Pringle kind of brought him down a little bit. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he really had one manager job where he worked well, and yeah, there was when he was with The Undertaker, and that was pretty much it. And that just was like kind of a really good match for him. And again, this goes back to my theory, is that they propelled themselves off one brilliant angle, and everything else was just disjointed, keep trying to breathe life into that one thing. They never came up with anything else after that.
No, they did a good job with Gino and Chris against the Von Erichs. And it was like, you know, the Von Erichs, it was almost like they had two feuds in them, Chris and Gino and the Freebirds.
Yeah.
And when they brought the Freebirds back, it was way too soon. It didn't really go anywhere. And then, you know, they had the Texas Stadium match where it was, they tried it again. Bruiser Brody against Rick Rude was the main event for the now world-class heavyweight championship. And it was going to be Mike. Who's going to be in the match? Was Fritz Gall part of the six-man in 86 at Texas Stadium, or was he just at ringside?
The six-man, when in 86 was it?
Okay, I've got it. This is the Texas Stadium match, so it's May 1986. Now I remember. It was supposed to be Kerry, Kevin, and Mike against the Freebirds.
Yeah, I got it.
In a Canadian lumberjack match, and Fritz, you know, was making a big deal about how he was going to whip Michael Hayes with a strap. And Kevin comes to the ring with his arm in a sling, and it wound up being Steve Simpson Mike Von Erich and Kerry Von Erich. And I remember looking at that going, you know, this is a complete mess. This is not, you know, the real Von Erichs against the real Freebirds. And shortly after that show, that might have been the last match for the Freebirds for World Class in 1986, because right around May, June of 86, they bolted for Watts.
Yep. And they would come back to do one more phase. This was again on Christmas, right? When they came back?
Yes, it was.
Christmas is 87, and to say the feud was on empty at the end of the last phase, this at this point it's completely empty. It's done, right?
You know what? Things had gotten so bad in World Class in 1987. It bordered on unwatchable. Actually, it may not have even bordered on unwatchable. That was just a brutal year for a wrestling promotion. Kerry Von Erich had been injured in a motorcycle accident, and obviously seriously injured. And the whole – and this was in August of 86, I want to say. And, you know, it was a lot more serious than they let on. And the whole year of 87, it almost felt like, okay, we're just going to keep the doors open and wait until Kerry gets back, because Kevin seemed to have lost interest in wrestling. And I think the injuries were starting to pile up, and he was just not very good anymore. So World Class itself is running on fumes. And by this point, you know, yeah, you're desperate enough to bring in Hayes, Gordy, and Roberts if they're willing. And they were.
Yeah, they're looking for a miracle at this point. So Kerry comes back in February, and he probably came back too early, right?
Yeah, he supposedly came back in February, and by trying to come back too soon, he kind of sealed his fate that his foot was going to have to be amputated. That's the story I heard.
Yeah. Okay, so as you said, the product was pretty terrible. I am looking at a 1988 match list, and I am stuck on one match that I just can't get past. September 23rd, 1988, Terry Gordy versus the Botswana Beast?
Yeah.
Who is the Botswana Beast?
I forget the guy's name, but I think he wrestled as Kamala 2 in Japan. The Freebirds, what they did in 88 was they tried to bring the Freebirds back as babyfaces, and Michael Hayes was having a concert at the Sportatorium. Michael's got an album out, and he's going to be the next David Lee Roth. And by this point, Hayes is booking, and it's if you didn't know what a booker was, you still knew Michael Hayes was the booker because he was making himself the center of everything.
Right.
But anyway, they have a concert. And the Freebirds invite the Von Erichs on stage, or Michael Hayes invites the Von Erichs on stage to sing with them. Well, luckily before any actual singing was done, Buddy Roberts gets up and he starts a fight with the Von Erichs, and someone gets hit with a guitar, and Hayes is brokenhearted. And it was Hayes did some of the most ridiculous interviews afterwards. "You ruined my concert, man, because you were drunk." He's a baby face. He would not stop whining about Buddy ruining his concert. But anyway.
Didn't he steal this entire bit from Memphis, Lawler, and Valiant?
I'm not sure. I have not seen that. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I have. It's been a long time. But yeah, I've seen it. You're right. That had to be where it came from.
And Michael was there then.
Oh, man. That's funny.
I'm pretty sure he was. He may not have been in Memphis, but I'm pretty sure he was in Tennessee at that point.
Well, I'm trying to think. This was 79.
That would have been. I think the thing with Valiant and Lawler would have been 78. It would have been Jimmy's first run in there.
Okay, so that's right around when Hayes and Gordy showed up on Memphis TV. So wow, you're right. He might have been in the dressing room and just stole.
Yeah,
because
Jerry. Jerry Jarrett told a story that he was bringing Jimmy Valiant in, but he needed Lawler to leave because you can't push a number one guy when you have a number one guy there.
That's true. All right.
And so once he came over, Jerry decided to have a singing career, and which went as well as you would think it did.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe also this is where he met Jimmy Hart.
Okay. Huh, that's interesting. I did not know that part. I vaguely recollect the Valiant Waller concert thing. And that's funny. I never put that together. That's where Michael Hayes came up with it. So we now have the new Freebirds. Buddy Roberts, who at this point, I mean, just looks too old. Buddy Roberts, Terry Gordy, who's barely around because he has Japan commitments, and Iceman King Parsons. This went about as well as you'd think. And it finally turns into Michael Hayes teaming up with former University of Tulsa football star Steve Cox, who had no charisma, against Buddy Roberts, who had brought in the SST, and the SST were really good.
Yes, the Samoan SWAT team.
Yeah, and the feud was interesting. I thought the promotion was interesting in 88 because now, and I'm not sure if this had really been done before outside of Memphis, but they were hot-shotting everything. Every show had like three angles, and you couldn't keep up with it, but it was fun TV to watch at the time.
It had a desperate feel to it.
Yeah. it had
a very watched 85 feel to it. 85, 80, you know, that era.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost obvious that, look, you know, you've got Kerry Von Erich, you've got Kevin Von Erich, and after that, you're a minor league promotion. And even at the time, I was like, you know, there's no way Michael Hayes is going to stay here forever. I mean, even if he has heat with Dusty in Atlanta, and even if McMahon doesn't want him, I mean, there's going to be something else out there for him. And
I was going to ask you, why did he even take the job? Because there was nowhere else?
I think he had had it with the NWA. I mean, he wasn't getting pushed. You know, it was obvious that he and Dusty didn't always get along, and I think he just saw an opportunity that, hey, I can come to Dallas, I can book, I can get, you know, points as booker, and I can get this thing up and running.
One quick aside, because I believe we're running out of time, but I wanted to get back to this quickly. How in God's green earth did they mess up the Freebirds in WWF at that time? That seems like a match made in heaven, doesn't it?
They pissed Vince off. I mean, supposedly Gordy passed out at ringside at one match, and then Vince had a meeting with them, and they passed out at the meeting, and Vince just said, to hell with these guys.
What would they have done with them if they came in straight?
I think they would have made them like a super tag team. I mean, from what I've heard, the guy Vince was interested in was Michael Hayes, and pushing him as, like, you know, a David Lee Roth rock star. And he had big plans for Hayes, and he just said, you know, all right, well, if you need to have Gordy and Roberts here, we'll do it. But, you know, it was kind of the Freebirds that screwed that up.
Do you think that Gordy could have gotten himself over enough to the point where Gordy and Hogan, maybe WrestleMania 2?
Yes. I think especially if you had done it with Michael Hayes as Gordy's spokesperson. Yeah, I think that would have been a possibility. It might not have been the number one thing they could have done, but if they decided, hey, this is what we're doing, I think it would have worked.
You have Hogan beat the crap out of Hayes for, you know, whatever reason on a Saturday night's main event. That seemed to be when they always did this.
Yeah.
And then have, you know, Gordy come in, and there you go. Just, you basically do the same exact thing that Bundy did.
Yeah, except, yeah, Bundy, I mean, not to get off track, but the whole WrestleMania 2 looked so disorganized. It was almost like, you know, they had the Saturday night's main event taping in Phoenix, and they're like, all right, what are we going to do to build up WrestleMania? Have Bundy run in? Okay, that sounds like fun. Yeah, do it, you know? Oh, we'll have Roddy Piper with Mr. T, too. That works. So anyway, a little bit of shop talk here. Check this out. If you like our podcast, we now have a Facebook page. It is the Stick to Wrestling Facebook page, and we're looking forward to having everyone sign up for that. We also have created a Stick to Wrestling Twitter handle, just like it says, Stick to Wrestling. I don't know about you, Sean. On Twitter, I am basically a mute with ears. I don't have a lot to say, but I have a lot of people that I follow. But hopefully you and I can make both the Facebook and Twitter feeds somewhat interesting.
It's going to be just crazy awesome.
Yes, it is. So anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening. Sean, thank you very much for your time.
And thank you, everyone, for listening, too. Yep.
And this has been a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Network. See you next week.